This is an iHeart podcast.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a great, great Friday. It's the final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a great Friday where we have been all over the map. And we're going to continue to be all over the map. We're going to talk about these shows like The View getting propped up. What, aren't podcasts propped up? Does Obama really have immunity? We'll talk about documentaries. How do I find them? All that, so much more coming up on the final hour of the Jesse Kelly Show. And then we're checking out of here until Monday, where we will return. Now, let's get back to him. Dear Mr. Big Hands, I've heard you bag on MacArthur, that would be Douglas MacArthur, a little bit, but you just did a great piece on how Japan became an ally. I think MacArthur, or don't you think MacArthur deserves a lot of credit for turning back communism in Japan? I love the show. Please feed the bar. Okay, first, let's be crystal clear about this. There was no communism in Japan. Japan, back at this time, was one of, if not the most anti-communist countries in the world, to the point where there is a picture, and I don't have his name, but there is a picture you can look at of, I think he was considered a socialist, a Japanese socialist on stage, and he is about to be stabbed to death by an assassin who's killing him because he's a communist. The assassin was arrested and I believe killed himself in jail a few days later, but they killed all the communists in Japan. Japan was ruled by an emperor, not a communist place at all. No communism. But I don't want to major on the minor here. Let's go back to this. Don't I think MacArthur deserves a lot of credit? Look, Douglas MacArthur did a lot of awesome things. When I dog on him, I'll give you my reasons in a moment, but when I dog on him, it's for specific reasons. It's not to say the guy never did anything right. He was a brilliant, brilliant military commander, just a brilliant man, period. He was also brave, really, really brave. I'm talking about his own physical bravery. He was a brave human being. He did good rebuilding Japan. Had a real love for those people. Had a real love for the Filipinos who loved him back too, helping them out, building them up. He did good. He did good with his strategy in Korea of landing his forces, well, our forces, behind the North Koreans, forcing them to scatter and turn around and come back at us and things like that. He did a lot of good things. He is a brilliant, brilliant man. My issue is, I have this thing about leadership where I hold leaders accountable. I hold them to a higher standard than normal people. And in the military, I hate it when a commander does not suffer the way his troops suffer. I despise it. And historically, commanders have known that that is just good leadership. Alexander the Great, he would get off his horse if you were digging ditches. Now, this is Alexander the Great. He doesn't have to do a thing. He can go back and let some Persian girl feed him grapes and fan him. Nope. He'll sit there and dig ditches with you. Julius Caesar, several times, threw himself into harm's way in the front line because he understood that's what troops respect. That is what troops follow. Gaius Marius, speaking of the Romans, he's a Roman commander you should know, but because of our crappy school system, most people don't. Gaius Marius, same thing, in the ditch with you, eating with you, what you ate. Napoleon would do this. Napoleon would eat what his men ate. He would be in the mud with his men. They loved him. They respected it. The great military leaders will suffer with you, sleep where you sleep, eat where you eat, walk through the muck where you walk through the muck. What happened in Bataan, in the Philippines? That's the Bataan Death March was Philippines, for those who don't know. What happened in Bataan was the Japanese attacked us. It was a surprise attack. And I'm not judging MacArthur for the preparations he made or didn't make for something like that. I'm really not. Mistakes happen. I'm not judging there. There's no judgment. But when our troops retreated to the peninsula of Bataan, where they were essentially trapped because we didn't have a navy to get them out, and the Japanese were coming at them, there is an island off the Philippines there. I guess it's part of the Philippines, called Corregidor. You can go look it up. Corregidor. In fact, pretty sure there are pictures of his little outpost out there. Douglas MacArthur sat on that island safe while the guys were starving to death. This is one of the things about the Bataan Death March people don't know a lot about. It's not just that they got our guys and they marched them all these miles in the brutal heat and tortured them and killed them and dehydrated them. It's not just that. The men who started that march were half dead already. They were sick as dogs from all the dysentery and yellow fever and everything else in the jungle. They were starving. They were so hungry they would be catching snakes and lizards and monkeys to eat them because they had run out of food. They looked like skeletons before they started the march, while Douglas MacArthur sat on Corregidor and ate like a king. That bothers me. And it bothered them. They called him Dugout Doug because he was not there with them. He was just fine, nice and safe, on the island, nice hot meal. And I realized Corregidor was being shelled and things like that. It wasn't all sunshine and roses, believe me, but he was not with his men. Now let's go to Korea. You know I'm a Korean War, I don't know if I would say fan, but it's called the Forgotten War, and it is criminally underplayed. That war was terrible. The conditions, the savage fighting, the freezing, the everything else. Our troops, if you have a Korean War veteran in your life, maybe they don't speak about it. Most of them don't. You pay that man respect, I'm telling you. Those guys went through, misery. Douglas MacArthur was in charge of that whole thing. He did not spend a single night in Korea. Not one. That bothers me. It doesn't have to bother you. People have different views of leadership and other things. It doesn't have to bother you. I'm not saying he's the devil himself. I'm not. Very capable man, very smart, did a lot of great things, and showed personal bravery on multiple occasions. No question about it. But when your men are calling you Dugout Doug, that's not good. Jesse, why is it that Rachel Maddow and the ladies of The View do not have a popular podcast or radio show? All the lefties are losing their TV gigs, and they don't have a radio show to fall back on like Hannity and company. Could it be that nobody wants to listen to them? Well, remember, it's all based on a world of make-believe. By the way, The View might be getting canceled because they're losing too much money. But yes, left-wing radio, left-wing podcasts has never been and will never be huge. There are a couple of them out there that are big, but because it's completely dependent on choice. Podcasts, now I realize this is a radio show, but it's also podcasted on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. If you download the Jesse Kelly Show, it's because you want to. You have options to download anything you want. You want to. If you watch The View, it's because you have ABC on. It's because the doctor's office has ABC on. ABC was just something you'll stream in your house all day, and you go right from that to soap operas or whatever else is around it. TV is an interesting bird, but TV itself, because of this, TV is propped up really by the oldest of us yet. That's why the oldest generation now, instead of being the most conservative, which they had been, it's by far our most communist generation. 65-plus men, 65-plus women, they are both majority Democrat. Did you know that? And obviously, it's not all of them. We have so many hardcores listening right now who are that age who listen. But 65-plus women, 65-plus men are the two demographics in the country that are still Democrat. Why? They watch TV. They watch TV all day. When they want to watch the news, they sit down and watch CNN. They sit down and watch NBC. They said, this is why this takes place. All right. Someone wants to know about Obama's immunity. Someone wants to talk about where I get documentary ideas from. Someone wants to talk about tattoos. All that and more still to come on the world famous Jesse Kelly Show. I want to talk to you about testosterone. Really, when I talk to you about that, I want to talk to you about energy and mood. How was your mood? How were your energy levels? You feel good, energized, ready to go? Or are you just always tired, a little down, another day at the office? You know chalk will change your entire life. You know chalk will change your life at work. Did you know that? I am so much better now than I used to be because I feel good. When you sit down and you do a show and you feel good, it's a little different than when you're sitting there, I got the yawns. It's awful. Try some natural herbal supplements from Chalk. It will change your life. Go to chalk.com/Jesse. Get a male vitality stack subscription or a female vitality stack subscription. I have a male vitality stack subscription. Oh, man. Best thing I've ever done. Chalk.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Missed out? Catch up. JesseKellyShow.com.
It's the Jesse Kelly Show. I almost forgot who I was there for a second. On a Friday, a wonderful Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday, and it hasn't even been heavy.
It is as heavy as 10 boxes that you might be moving.
And remember, you can email the show, Jesse@JesseKellyShow.com. Let's get back to as many of these as we possibly can before we check out of here and enjoy our weekend. Jesse, you ever thought about getting a tattoo wedding band? I was complaining, in case you don't know what he's talking about, I was complaining the other day that I hate wearing a wedding ring, a wedding band. I always have. I used to have a big fat one, like a traditional one, and I hated it. It was always uncomfortable. I then moved to this super thin, tiny one, and it's going to rip my finger off. Every time I do something physical, I catch it on things. It drives me crazy. I bet we got 100 emails of people saying, have you ever considered getting a tattoo one? So let me just bare my soul here for you for a second. And I know no matter what, I'm going to get made fun of, and that's fine. It's part of being the Oracle. I am 44, and I am, as of this moment, tattoo-less. I don't have any tattoos. And I don't have anything against tattoos. And I mean nothing at all. It's just not something that bothers me. Sometimes they look cool. Sometimes they look terrible, right? Like anything else, you overdo it, it ends up looking bad. I think they can look cool on dudes. I think they can look pretty hot on women if they're done right. But, you know, it's also not a requirement. Ob doesn't have any either. We're just not tattoo people. A tattooed wedding band. It's not that I'm against the concept, and I appreciate the suggestion. At 44, am I not too old to get my first tattoo? Once you've made 44 without them, am I not too old? I feel like I'm past the age. And I'm not saying if you're a tattoo person, you shouldn't get any more at 44. I mean, if you've gone 44 years without one, do you want one now? And again, I have nothing against getting one. I've actually stood in a tattoo parlor with all my Marine Corps buddies at one point in time in Hollywood, California. It was late and probably not the time to be making those particular decisions. But I was ready to go. A couple of them got them. I couldn't settle on one. It was the permanency of it. I was looking at all the different designs they had on the wall, and I liked a couple a little, and finally I passed. So it's not, again, I'm not against it. I'm 44 now. I think it's too late. Maybe a tattoo of my face somewhere on my body. I've always thought would be cool. What, Chris? Just some like a big one taking over my entire back or something like that. It would be awesome. It would, or on my hands. What if I got it on the palm of my hands, Chris? What? Don't reject me. Hey, Jesse, I need help understanding President Obama's immunity. I don't understand why he can't be indicted even if he can't be tried or even found guilty and can't be sentenced. Please discuss. Okay, so I really burst everyone's bubble when I dropped this one on you last week. We even got some hate mail, people who were mad at me about it, and all that stuff's fine. So let me explain again. Presidents have immunity. Just stay with me. Just stay with me here, please. Presidents have immunity up to a certain point. Because the evil communists tried to throw Donald Trump in prison 100 different ways, the Supreme Court had to step in. You remember that recently. And they had to essentially reassert what was already true. You can't throw the president in prison for doing the things he was doing as president of the United States of America. And I already know what you're screaming at the radio, so just hold on, hold on. So now, Barack Obama, he can't walk up to a gas station and stick a gun in someone's face and rob the register. He'd be arrested, he'd be charged, he'd be sent to prison. As president of the United States, he cannot walk up to that cash register and stick a gun in their face and take all the money. Because that is not considered a prosecution of his duties as president. However, as president, and this is not what I want, okay? This is not what I'm campaigning for. This is how it is. And if you don't like it, too bad, so sad. If the president of the United States of America tells his FBI director, hey, go dig up some dirt on my political opponent and then investigate him. That is evil. It's sick. It's wrong. You can even argue it's unlawful. You can say all that, and you are probably correct about that. But according to our laws, that is considered to be part of his duty as president. The same way you can't prosecute George Bush for the war in Iraq. You know, they have weapons of mass destruction, and that didn't turn out to be the case. And you can say, the lefties were always saying it, throw him in prison, throw him in prison. You can argue, he's sick, he's evil, he's wrong, it was bad. You can argue all those things, and all that stuff's fine. Argue it till you're blue in the face. He gave that order as part of his presidential duties. Therefore, he can't burn for it. I am not celebrating this. There's nobody on the planet I'd rather see in prison more than that evil communist Barack Obama. I wish he could burn for this. He's not going to burn. If you are holding out for that, you will be disappointed. It's your daddy's show. Time to bring you back to reality. All right? All right. Let's talk about documentaries. Let's talk about backlash if one of these people go down. Someone has a question about AIPAC. Hey, tune in for that one, Chris. Before we get to AIPAC, what are you going to leave behind for your kids? And I don't mean houses and money and gold coins and things like that. All that stuff's fine. But when your children want to see you, will they be able to on their phones, on their computers? When your grandchildren, when your great-grandchildren want to know, what did mom sound like? How was dad? Are they going to be able to? Legacy Box is you passing down your legacy to generations you will never meet. Get your home videos digitized. Your pictures, your hard copy pictures, get them digitized. This American company, Tennessee company, will do it by hand and send you all your stuff back. Get it done now. Stop putting it off. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. LegacyBox.com/Jesse. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly DC.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Friday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download it, iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. If you want to send us an email, your love, your hate, your death threats, everything is welcome, including Ask Dr. Jesse questions, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Jesse, you're the last one I trust. Can you explain AIPAC and how it affects our political futures or whatever? He said we will leave out past assassination theories, etc. Okay, for those who do not know, AIPAC is the Israel PAC. AIPAC, it's AIPAC. Now, let me describe what they are. It's fairly obvious. They are a PAC, a well-funded PAC, and they dole out large chunks of money to everyone. To be honest with you, everyone. Republicans, Democrats. I remember when I was running for office, I told you my campaign manager is Jewish. Well, is Jewish, but he was Jewish back then too. And I asked him because I was totally unfamiliar with him. I said, so what are they? Republican, Democrat? He said, oh, they're everything. So what are they? Here's what they are. They donate huge amounts of money to ensure American politicians have a more favorable view of Israel. Now, let's lay this out in a very, very frank way that will, I'm sure, offend everybody, but too bad, so sad. PACs. All PACs have an interest. That's the purpose of starting a PAC. PACs like AIPACs have an interest. There are PACs you love and PACs you hate. Ones that are pro-life, ones that are pro-abortion, ones that are pro-guns, ones that are banned guns. And they dole out their money to politicians in the hope that the politicians, having received their money, will enact policies that are favorable to their cause. It's a fairly obvious point. Now, what makes AIPAC controversial? Israel, from its very, I guess I'll call it, second formation, the modern state of Israel, when they were reconquering the land, they did not only do it through guns and buying property and all kinds of different things, and all those things happened too. They engaged politically and internationally. They knew they needed the aid, the ear. They needed powerful countries, including the United States of America, to back their play. And so it was not, it wasn't a passive endeavor. It was very focused. It was well-funded. There are going to be Jewish ambassadors. I should call them Israeli, although they're all Jewish. Israeli ambassadors in the office of every major government that would welcome them, asking, will you help us here? Can you do this? Can you sign on for this? Can you sign on for that? Lobbying is as old as government itself. And the Israeli government lobbying other governments around the world to get in their favor is as old as the modern state of Israel itself. Now, in American politics today, Israel is more controversial than it has been in the past. On the left and the right. Now, the left, they just flat out hate them by now. But the right, it's become more controversial too. People, hey, why are we getting involved? Hey, do the Jews run the government and all this other stuff? Now, if you're somebody who thinks like that, the Jewish people, the state of Israel has a heavy influence on our government. They run the government. Maybe you think that way. That's fine. If you're somebody who thinks that way, and then you pull up campaign donations, and you find out a politician who votes some way you don't like got $100,000 from AIPAC. What does that do? It reinforces to you what you already thought. The Jews run the government. It completely reinforces it to you. Now, I'm not here to talk you into or out of anything, but I am going to clarify a couple things that everyone has to understand. One, this PAC is by far, it's not even close to being the biggest donor of the PACs that are out there. It's not even close. There's a lot of misinformation out there that they donate more than APAC. That's not even close. They're not that powerful. There are other PACs that carry a lot more weight than APAC does. That's one. Two, every PAC, as I laid out, has an interest. APAC's interest is Israel, period. And every country around the world, they have a PAC. Well, I shouldn't say every country around the world. Many countries around the world have a PAC, and they are in the ear of our politicians. I'll tell you a little story about this one. Armenia is kind of in the news, Turkey, all this stuff in the news from stuff that happened today. It doesn't matter. But you know about the Armenian genocide. At least you've heard of it before, where the Turks were expelling the Armenians and they killed a million of them. It was this really terrible affair. When I was running for office, I had both PACs. You know they both have PACs? Did you know that? Most people don't know that. I had both PACs come to me before I was even in office. Of course, I didn't end up getting there. Before I was even in office, I had both PACs come to me because they wanted to ensure that once I got to Congress, if I got to Congress, that I was going to be an ambassador on their behalf for that specific incident. That's how deep the lobbying goes and how pervasive it goes inside the country. Meaning I had the Turks saying, hey, you're not going to say we genocided those people, right? And I remember thinking it was so odd, like, hey, maybe you guys should let that go. And then the Armenians too. Hey, when you get there, you're going to tell everyone what the Turks did to us, right? And I thought the same thing back then. And by the way, I love Armenian people. I don't know why I've always gotten along with them. But I thought the same thing back then. This is odd. It looks bad. And they all do it. The reason more people talk about APAC than other PACs is there is that reputation that is not completely unwarranted. There is that reputation that the Israeli government does heavy lobbying with Western governments in order to get the backing of Western governments. And that, by the way, like I said, I'm not trying to be mealy-mouthed about this. That reputation is not undeserved. They do. That's part of how they establish their state. They do a lot of it. And they'll be very, very overt with getting you over there to tour it. Hey, we want to bring you over there. Why do you think there's always a congressional junket in Israel? They will have a fortune spent to grab 10 congressmen and fly them over there first class. And we're going to put you up in the best hotels. And we're going to show you the sights. We want you to fall in love with Israel. We want you to stand with Israel. We want you to protect Israel at any cost. And all that stuff's fine. That's well and good, whatever. But the people who naturally, who are more isolationist, and certainly the people who kind of give Jews the side eye, wait a minute, are you manipulating things again behind the scenes? If that's how you think, it looks bad, doesn't it? If that's how you think, if you think the American government is run by Israel, if the Jews are running the world, way to go, Chris. If you think the Jews are running the world, and then you pull up your phone and you find out, wait a minute, a congressional delegation of 20 people are at the Wailing Wall? What? Our whole government is owned by APAC. Look, like anything, like everything, some truth, a lot of falsehood, a lot of truth. Got to suss out what is real and what is not real before we go flying off the handle. All right. Let's talk about Obama's people going to jail. Is there going to be a backlash? My documentary love, where do I find them? Next.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, final segment of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful, fantastic Friday, and Ask Dr. Jesse Friday. Going to get to as many of these as possible. So Jewish producer Chris brought up during the break that he said, I think what a lot of people complain about when it comes to the APAC stuff and the Israel stuff is that they have an outsized influence. Because like you said, there are many bigger PACs who donate more money, and every country has a PAC, but APAC's the one you hear about. You see congressmen waving Israeli flags all over the place, and so to people, it seems bad. Well, there are two reasons for the outsized influence, because that is not incorrect at all. The first reason I already laid out, they focus on that and have always focused on that. It has always been a focused effort to get in the favor of powerful governments in order to help them. That's true. But the second part is America's evangelical base makes America a ripe place to use that influence because of the Israeli connection in the Bible. I mean, look, I went over there too, and it was a Holy Land trip because it's a Holy Land for me. You know, that's the thing. It's a Holy Land for Christians. It's a Holy Land for Jews. It's a Holy Land for Muslims. It's the Holy Land. So when you have that kind of crossover, you're naturally going to have a country in America that is going to lean way more pro-Israel than, oh, I don't know, Saudi Arabia or someplace like that. Dr. Jesse, you say in your free time you consume history, whether books or documentaries. Where do you watch your documentaries? You have a favorite streaming service. Okay, so I have the worst answer for you here because I know you're probably, I know you're probably hoping that I'm going to hand you some gem. And I can't. Here's what I do. I don't seek out a documentary or documentary service or documentary channel. I wait until there is a history subject that has sparked my interest. And then I go searching and hoovering up every bit of information on it I can find. As far as where I find a documentary, I actually have subscriptions to places I really don't care for and don't even like just for documentary purposes. I'll look up YouTube. I'll see if there's anything that's well done there. It's a bunch of crap. You can't really rely on that. But I'll look and see. Remember, when I do a history story or I'm interested in something, I try to pull from as many sources as I can. I'll never watch a video because you never know if that guy's full of crap. I'll go to YouTube. I'll look and see if Amazon Prime has a series on it. Does Netflix have a series on it? Now, most of those three things, YouTube, Prime, Netflix, garbage. Even if you find one, it's garbage. It's commie. Now, occasionally, there'll be a gem in there. And when they do it right, they do it right. HBO. HBO, again, a garbage commie company. But when they want to do a documentary right, man, can they do it right. But again, like Netflix, they have a new Vietnam documentary out. I think I already told you this. What's it called? Turning Point? I think it's called Turning Point. It's about Vietnam. I made it two episodes in and I just turned it off. I couldn't take it anymore. There was some good information in there. It didn't quite outweigh the relentless commie propaganda, so I dropped it. There was a subscription I got, and I think I still have it. I think the channel was called The Documentary Channel. Gosh, I should have looked that up before I did this. I think it's called The Documentary Channel. I don't have a magic bullet for you. I sift. I watch, and I'll turn it off. And I watch, and I turn it off. And eventually, because I've done this for so long, it doesn't take me long to figure out, okay, this is well-researched. This is somebody who knows what they're talking about. Chris said, what's the ratio good to bad? I bet you I turn off 60 to 70% of the ones I start. It's just really hard if you're into history to find history that is not framed as America sucks, the West sucks, everyone else is great. It's hard to find history that is presented that kind of way. 60-70%. I bet that's it. You asked about the boring ones too. Oh, I watch the boring ones too. When I watch, remember, in my mind, I'm trying to do a good show for you. I'm trying to do a good history show for you. Yeah, it's obviously a labor of love because I nerd out on that stuff, but I watched a World War I one once, and it's like one of those movies they used to show you in school with the grainy, crappy video and the guy who talks in the monotone voice like this, and then General Johnson sailed up the strait. And if I didn't have to watch that, I wouldn't have, but there was so much good information in it I watched it anyway. I wanted to do a good show. And so sometimes you got to slog through that pack, that stuff to do a good show. Now, before we go on and talk about Obama here, I want you to fortify your retirement this weekend. In case this little spicy trade war with India and China continues apace, let's not wake up on Monday and be wiped out. Let's make sure, no matter what, good times and bad times, precious metals, you should always be acquiring a little. Not everything. You don't put your eggs in one basket. A little more today, a little more next month. You should have precious metals in your retirement already. Gold Co. will do that for you. Let Gold Co. do it because Gold Co. makes it easy. Gold Co. has over 6,000 five-star reviews, A-plus rated from the Better Business Bureau. Let Gold Co. fortify what you worked so hard for. You busted your butt your whole life. You put that money away. Don't give it away because the market goes pop. Call them. 855-817-GOLD. Or go to jessielikesgold.com, all right? They'll get you a free copy of their gold and silver kit, which I would recommend. Hey, Oracle, I agree we must see former Obama people go to jail, but do you think the public are prepared for the violent backlash that will surely follow? I have doubts about how much violent backlash we will see in this country as long as the DOJ continues to realize they should go after the funding of this public backlash, and then it disappears. Jesse, is there a way to break the mind virus spell? The person in my life calls it a belief system. Are there examples of people who have? Remember, the Democrat in your life is in a cult, and people can wake up from cults. They have woken up many, many, many times throughout history. You stay calm, keep bringing up facts. Little tidbits of information can, with the right person, work their way in, start creating that doubt. They already know it somewhere in the back of their mind. This can't be right. There's something wrong with this. Just be patient. It's not going to be fast. It's not going to be easy. Jesse, why are you always looking so angry? Because I have kids. All right, it is time for the weekend. You put your phone down and go enjoy yourself. That's all.
This is an iHeart podcast.